I'm Betsy Makis. I'm a Devorty girl on the English Dictionary. The reason for that is that I actually do type on a Devorty keyboard layout. You won't see that.
Excuse me?
Yes?
I don't think your mic's working.
Okay. It says it's on. Is that any better?
Keep talking.
I'll just speak up. It says it's turned on, so. I've been with the project since late 2003, and kind of got found Wikipedia and then found Wiktionary and never looked back. It's a lot of fun. At least for a word in the area, which I kind of know. So who here has a dictionary at home on the shelf? Pretty much everybody. What do you use it for besides the doorstop? It's a workshop, come on.
That's exactly what I use it for.
Okay, well, why do you use it as a doorstop? Do you know what ellswords that you need?
Because we look up most everything on our computer now.
Okay.
Even when we buy into incorrect definitions.
All right. So when you go to use a dictionary on a computer, what are you expecting to find?
Something that's a definition that I think I'm usually looking up stuff that I'm already familiar with.
Okay.
So if I'm not sure about a definition, but I have an idea, I'll look it up, and then if it's close to, enough to what I already think that it may be, I'll go with it. But I don't really use a dictionary online to look up new words because I don't know how much I can trust it, so then I'll go to the newer stuff.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting that you trust it for things that you already sort of know and not for others. There's another kind of dictionary besides just definition. Right, so I want to know what defenestrate means. I will go look it up in the dictionary. The other kind of dictionary, the other major kind of dictionary, is a translating dictionary. And that's traditionally, you know, if you've ever studied a foreign language, you've got this thing that translates between Spanish and English, and it's just correlating words in English to words in Spanish. And it's not really telling you what they mean. They expect you already to know the word in one language or the other. So there are really two basic kinds of dictionaries. There are others. I went to my library one time and looked at the reference section, and there were loads of dictionaries. And there were dictionaries of, anybody take a guess? What other kinds of dictionaries are out there?
Etymology.
So there are dictionaries that have specific information about words. Have you ever looked at the reference section of the library?
Technical dictionaries.
So certainly dictionaries about specific types of language. So things like law would have a specific dictionary. There was one about woodworking.
There are dictionaries which concentrate to specify synonyms for the words.
Okay.
Synonym dictionaries, there are ideographical dictionaries which relate meanings of the words with each other.
And there are also word dictionaries that focus on words or terms in a particular type or category. So that would be things like idiom dictionaries, right, or slang dictionaries. Come on in if you'd like. Okay. So there are all these different kinds of dictionaries. What kind of dictionary is Wiktionary?
All.
Pretty much all of them.
Anything you want it to be.
Anything we want it to be. Anything we can make it, right? The idea behind Wikipedia is all the sum of human knowledge. But I don't think that happens without the sum of human language. So that's kind of what we're trying to get at. Since most of you probably...
I'm sure that you're going to get into this, but
sure.
All of those different kinds of dictionaries and reference books have different users in mind, and they're structured quite differently based on what the writers assume the needs of the users are.
That's a good point. Dictionaries are usually traditionally... book that's organized alphabetically, right? I have never alphabetized an entry in Wiktionary. And the reason that I've never alphabetized an entry in Wiktionary is that it's all on the computer. If we want it sorted, we tell the computer, sort it.
So does it sort ASCII-wise? Because dictionaries don't sort the same way that, say, Microsoft Word sorts something.
You know, I'm not entirely certain. We did have problems with it because of case sensitivity. We convenient was to sort capital letters first and then lowercase letters. And don't get me started on special characters like Greek and things.
Maybe something like 911, though, because in a traditional dictionary it goes in N. But
something that's that's a numeric entry. We have a few of those. More likely, the way that you search for a word is to type it into the box and pick it out of the list, kind of like you would search in Google or something. So really, most of the sorting that happens on the fly. It happens when somebody says, give me a list of the things in this category. Or it happens when somebody says, give me a list of all of the words that begin with K-N. So we don't really spend a lot of time organizing Wiktionary that way. What we do, and I'll get to this later, is we start to put words into categories that are important to us for some reason. And we start to give flags and templates and things like that to certain words. Since most of you, I think, have probably dealt a lot more with Wikipedia than with Wiktionary, what's the difference between an encyclopedia and a dictionary?
With a dictionary, you're concerned with the word primarily. Mm-hmm. And with an encyclopedia, you're concerned mainly with the concept denoted by the word.
Exactly. So if you were writing an encyclopedia article about car, you would have the history of cars and how they operate and things like that. Whereas if you're writing an encyclopedia article about, watch yourself. Whereas if you're writing an dictionary article about car, you would have the etymology of the word, you'd have the pronunciation, the definition of the word itself, and different usages, things like that. So what I'd like to do at this point is just jump into a word that isn't in Wiktionary yet and write a definition for it. Create an article. Wiktionary is at wiktionary.org. And if you can't remember, English is the N, and the two-letter isopode. Speaking as an administrator, please create an account, please log in. And I didn't really do a PowerPoint for this, but here are a short list of words that I found that aren't in Wiktionary yet. We have about 165,000 words right now. We've missed a few. Which one of these words would anybody like to have a go at?
Hand-picked.
Okay. What about this apsis thing here? Is that a good word to start with? Who knows this word? Me neither. I got this word off the request list. I didn't even look to see whether it was a word. I would recommend, if you're starting in doing Wiktionary, that the first word that you do not be something you haven't ever heard of. Having said that, my very first word in Wiktionary was something I'd never heard of. I spent about 5 hours researching it. I'm never doing that again. So let's go to hand-picked. I'm not going to talk a lot about formatting. Formatting is very important to us. The reason that formatting is very important to us is that it helps the dictionary entry to be consistent. Whereas with an encyclopedia article about cars, you'd have history of cars and operating principles of a car and whatever other headings. An encyclopedia article can be very free form. In a dictionary article, we expect certain consistent pieces of information, even if they're not all there. those would be in etymology, pronunciation, definition, maybe related terms, things like that. The reason I'm not going to go into formatting, two things. It's written down. We have a very nice page that somebody besides me has put together, spent a lot of time on. That is called Entry Layout Explain. It is WTELE is the shortcut. And it has more than you ever wanted to know about exactly how we'd like articles formatted. This is in English. If you're formatting articles in a different dictionary, the rules will be different. The other reason I'm not going to go into formatting a whole lot right now is that it's boring. Read this yourself. And let's start with an article. I just typed handpicked into the search box over here on the left. And it says, we don't have that word. I looked this up before. We don't have that word. It gives me a choice. When a couple of our programming, more programming inclined contributors got so sick of retyping formatting that they went and made templates that you can just click on. And it has to do with what part of speech it is. Does anybody see up here an appropriate one to use for handpicked?
Handpicked is an adjective, but it's from the verb handpicked. So the first decision you probably have to make is, are you going to define it as an adjective coming from
the verb? Well, we want to define it as both. These are just to get you started. These are an easy way to get formatting without remembering exactly.
And the other thing I would look at first in that one is, it doesn't already exist as two words, and or does it exist hyphenated?
That is a good question. I'm going to proceed with the example. So there's all this stuff in here. And what this is, is a bunch of templates to choose from. If you don't like them, ignore them. There are several choices of how to do the inflection line. It's okay to just put the word in the inflection line. And since this is really kind of a verb form, I'm going to do exactly that. We'd like it in bold print. And there we are. So this is the beginnings of a dictionary article, except there's nothing in it yet, except a stub nose. We don't really want a lot of stub notices in the dictionary. Most dictionary articles are pretty short. If you're going to make an article, make an article. Now, can somebody use the word handpicked in a sentence as a verb?
It was handpicked throughout the project.
Okay. We've just given ourselves some pretty important information. By making an example sentence, we put the word in context, and we have an idea what it might mean. We've also, if we needed it, given ourselves a pretty good clue about what part of speech it might be or what part of speech it might be in this particular sense. So the next thing is probably the hardest thing to learn, and that's writing a definition. And I think the easiest way to go about writing a definition is to just put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's learning the language for the first time. Maybe a child, maybe somebody from another country. Never heard this word before. What do you tell them? What do you tell them about the word in this sense?
They know too much.
They know things that are it. And so most commercial lexicographers don't try and work from their brain out. They try and work from data in. So, so it might be more helpful to go and look at a bunch of examples where people who are not trying to explain the word actually wrote it down and see what you can generalize from a lot of sentences that use the word handpicked.
That is one way to do it. I do, when I write for Wiktionary, I collect a lot of my words, just things that I've heard people say, things that I've caught myself using, things that I've read somewhere. And that certainly is one approach, and it's a good one to go and get citations for a word. And we can do that if anybody would like to try it. But if you're hand-picked for a position, if you're hand-picked to run the project...
Thank you. Yeah, with that, then perhaps a more literal usage might be better. The apple was hand-picked for the tree.
Right. So that... Yes?
I would also think that maybe thinking about people being in charge of a project who are not handpicked, so what is not handpicked mean? And then that
right.
helps you decide what are the important distinctions to draw out about handpicked.
Right. So I think...
The synonyms as well. I mean, it's
right.
It's not a selection or who I've selected.
The reason that I'm taking this particular approach, I try to... You can throw synonyms at a definition. And often it works pretty well. But if you're explaining it in a little bit more of a free-form style first, I think sometimes you get a little bit more detail. And I'm a little bit... There are two senses. There's a literal sense and sort of a more figurative sense. So, and why don't we start with the more literal sense? If the apple was handpicked from the tree, what did I do with it?
Is that really how they use it? That you said pick by apple?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. It is used metaphorically, usually rather than literally.
But there is a literal, there is a root
case
from some sort of.
And picked by hand as opposed to machine picked.
Right. Right.
You can now have machines wandering through a strawberry patch picking up all the strawberries.
So yeah, this is the obvious sense. This is the really obvious sense, but that's okay. It gives us some place to start from. Is there a connotation here that maybe the apple was a little bit more carefully selected or picked with more care? I would say so. And we can write that into the... And we can write that into the definition. So now we have a definition for the literal sense. Now, what about the figurative sense? It means kind of the same thing, except that we're not picking fruit anymore, right? It's an extension of the literal definition. And I think we almost got it already, right? If somebody was handpicked, what happened?
Chosen or selected for a particular task or specific task.
Right.
It's accessed by one person, as opposed to a group of people.
Yeah, I don't think
you
can say it.
Can it be handpicked by a community?
That's not necessarily
the same. Yeah, it gives us an
annotation.
It's
an individual.
Yeah. So by maybe an individual or a very small group, I could see somebody being handpicked by the executives or something, right? Probably. But by maybe an insider.
Well, that's why I was suggesting the opposite, because appointed by a committee sounds a little bit different than handpicked. Handpicked gives a sense of with awareness of that person's individual strengths and weaknesses that were perfect for this project, although other people might not have recognized.
Right. Or also selected in bulk, right? Would be the opposite of handpicked. We weren't too careful about it. We just went out there and grabbed the first 20 people that we found, right? So let's see if we can write that into this definition here. Wiktionary does do wiki links within Wiktionary. If you just do the double brackets, if you want to link to Wikipedia, you can prefix it with a W colon. I'll show you that there. And there's a button, of course. I think most of us have used this software somewhere. Does everybody basically like this definition? Is that about what we said it was going to be? Would that give somebody who was new a clue what this word was about?
There's something kind of implied in this definition that's not made explicit. That it's not an active verb here. It's both. So things are handpicked, but we haven't used it in that role. And it'd be interesting to go and take a look to see how often people say, I handpicked it versus he was handpicked. So is it important to know that it's mostly in this kind of syntax, or that it can also be the other way around?
I would say
more example sentences to show both ways.
I would say that's the kind of thing that is likely to come later in a Wiktionary context. There's that kind of detail kind of depends on whether the author of a particular article knows that, cares about that kind of thing. We have done a certain amount of work so far with citations and with looking at usage information and things like that. At this stage, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's fairly little of that kind of information in Wiktionary.
Maybe you covered this before, I'm sorry I was late, but it seems I just started a definition of a verb with just a definition of its past tense. So we normally define a verb by its, start with its present tense.
Ordinarily, probably we would. We do want to capture inflections. So we actually do want a separate article for inflections. In this case, I suspect that this is kind of one of these that appears more often in this sense. And it certainly has a sense in this form. Generally, if something is not If a word in an inflection is just the standard extension of that word, we'll use a template to say that this is the past tense of run. So I'm going to save this definition.
With this article as it is, it does not bear any connection with, with hand pick, the present tense of the verb. Maybe we should add something to
the etymology.
Yeah. Like,
okay.
That you define it as two.
That would do it.
We do have etymology sections. I was going to get to that. There really was. And this is also a compound word. Um, For words that are derived from forms, we usually just give as the etymology what they're derived from. And that's certainly the simplest thing to do.
What about showing that it can also be hyphenated? Is there an alternative one, essentially?
You guys are getting way ahead of me. Spelling these days?
Alternative forms.
This has gone, this heading.
I consider that flexible. I mean, I prefer not to remember all of these details. I mean, some people get upset with, you know, the changes in mind.
I guess we've been looking forward to that. Somebody's going to go through and make them consistent, I'm sure.
And that's two separate words as well.
Oh, we'll link that as two separate words?
Both. I would include both. Both hand pick, hand pick, and hand space pick.
Oh, okay.
They are two separate variations that exist.
Now, is this American English?
Wiktionary is an international project where there is a difference between UK and US English. We try to note it, but we don't always know. I'll be talking with one of the Wiktionarians in England sometimes, and we'll be just chatting. And I'll say something, and he says, "You didn't seriously just say that." I said, "What did I say?" He says, "I'm marking that as US." Okay.
Yeah, handpicked. With just a space, but not linked as two separate words.
Okay.
I was just going to add, I've just looked up hand-picked. The Concise Webster Dictionary, the Concise Oxford Dictionary, and the same Webster, but not the Oxford. So it probably should be marked as an American English.
It's not in the Concise Oxford UK, but it is in the American
English. Full of
But it's a hidden form because it's on the hand pick, which is the left hand curve.
That's a hard thing to tell. You know, you use something normally and somebody else doesn't, and you have no idea how far that's gone. And another person from England was with me one time, and I was trying to give directions during one of the scariest car rides of my life because he was driving. And I said, no, you have to turn through a dead ends up here. And he says, that as a verb?
Yes.
Of course I use it as a verb,
yeah.
Don't we all? So it's a very hard thing to tell. It's one of the things that we haven't really started to capture yet, except for some of the obvious differences, is what is used in a particular region.
Actually, Microsoft now, when you install, you get 13 choices of English. Including Jamaican and Caribbean and Trinidadian.
So,
the main thing is to be aware of all the different possibilities and not jump to conclusions. There was a Wikipedia that made this sort of big argument recently over limited access highway and whether it should be a freeway or turnpike or expressway and a whole range of words connected with that sort of thing. And, you know, even with U.S. usage, it's going to vary from one place to another.
And like we say, where did you go to school? And we mean college. And in England, that just means where did you go to elementary school? They don't mean school doesn't include college.
Well, I mean, as I, you know, usually our Canadian usage is that the college is a subdivision of a university, which I guess is, in some respects, can be used in the U.S.
No, not always. It's not always. And a college in England is very often the sub-quality compared to a university. So if you say, well, I went to college, they think you went to community college.
Or even a preparatory level.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is not uncommon.
This is not
that's all we need to think. So you can understand what they're doing.
Yeah, but somebody has to write the dictionary in the first place and figure it all out.
And one of the things that we would like to get better at is tapping into the worldwide knowledge that we have here and starting to record some of that regional usage. I should mention that this heckler over here is do you want to be introduced by your screen name or your real name?
This is
Ray. He edits his eclecticology, and he's one of our bureaucrats on the English Dictionary as well. So he's trying to keep me honest, keep me in trouble a little bit.
You're doing fine.
Well, then the audience needs to wake up. Except they might think of more things we're doing wrong. Okay, so is this what you'd expect to find in a dictionary if you looked up this word?
Of course, at the beginning, you told us that dictionary wants to be, all kind of dictionary, meant to unify every kind of dictionary. And if you write etymology, what's in this dictionary is not correct. What is there, but if I look up, for example, a word like elephant in an etymological dictionary, there are many other things. And now I think we have to decide how far we go, because what's written there is not enough.
This is a very simple example as far as etymology is concerned. Certain individuals, I guess I should start by saying, dictionary is not complete. If you're interested in etymology and you'd like to come help write them and help research them, please do. You have a lot of work to do. I started with the definition because I think that's generally central to what people expect to find in a dictionary. But it's certainly not the only thing. And to catalog words in all languages is not a small task. We're not there yet. And in fact, I think if you were to look closely at this article, this is already a longer article than quite a good many of our dictionary start out. But it's not complete yet.
Can I just ask, did you intend to have to the right? I'll edit that one.
Huh?
I'll edit that.
Okay. No, sometimes we mistype, but that's what the edit button is for. What else might you expect to find in a dictionary if you looked up this word?
Translations?
Pronunciation. Okay. I'm going to get to pronunciation first, because that's one of my favorite things to do. I don't read IPA. IPA is the International Phonetic Alphabet. It's what we try to use. Here's an example of it right here. It's what we try to use for pronunciations, IPA and Sample, which is another international phonetic alphabet. Who here can pronounce this for me in French from reading this? That's the English pronunciation. Approximately. You're pretty close. And I didn't manage to get the audio picked up here. I do encourage you, we do have audio on this particular word from one of our missionaries who lives just outside of Paris. And I do encourage you to go listen to this word. It sounds nothing in French like it sounds in English. But you can't really tell that from the language. IPA is good stuff, we'd like to have it. It would be a 2-hour lecture in and of itself. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about that today. One thing that you can do if you're editing dictionary with pronunciations is just skip them. When you have people who know how to write IPAs, you go through and do mostly that. I think that's what you and I do for the most part, is skip them.
Yeah, I'm not a pronunciation addict.
Yeah. If you feel that the word needs a pronunciation, there are places to request pronunciations. You can add a subminis, there's a request for pronunciation.
Right, so, but you know, particular difficulty that can arise with pronunciations is a lot of these words are known in written form only, and any pronunciation is speculative.
That's true.
Like Armageddon, which is what my wife is always called, Armageddon.
There's a lot of words that are primarily written. So that's the easy thing to do with pronunciation, especially if you're new to the project. What I choose to do with pronunciation is to give people a little bit better clue. And I'm going to see if I can demonstrate that today. This is Audacity. Audacity is free software. You can go download it from the people that write it. And hand-picked. My volume settings are all wrong. This is not my usual computer. So what I would do with this, if it were the right volume, and I'll re-record it later, is
when you
know, if one of the other people that's on the laptop has a translation into yet another language, by all means, add it in right now.
Give it a second for the Dutch and let it come.
I was just going to ask, when you add a translation, mm-hmm. Does it have to be an exact translation? Because I have a Tagalog word which wouldn't exactly be handpicked, but right. It would be selected
okay.
in Tagalog.
All right. Let me point out here first that we have two distinct definitions. Would you say that your word is for one of them and not the other?
Yeah.
Okay. Which definition is your word? The second
one.
Okay. And if a friend of back here is doing it right, is adding a translation table that will distinguish between meanings for those translations.
Well, I'm doing a quick job, and I've just finished it.
Okay.
If you do a refreshing, you'll see that it's there.
That's good. Okay. And which word definition are you?
It is basically the same one.
Tricky thing because we're translating one of these and not the other. And it's very important if you're adding translations to something with multiple senses to distinguish which sense you're translating. If I translate the word chain into Spanish, am I talking about the thing that I would use to hold up a swing? Am I talking about chain of restaurants or chain of radio stations. So those are very, very different senses. If I translate the word plug, am I talking about something connected to the end of my power cord? Or am I talking about a sales pitch? I think you can.
Or a wad of tobacco.
So I think you can see that those three senses would have very different translations. Right? We just don't divide concepts along the same lines. That's actually a very big problem. And it's one of the things that Dictionary Z is able to solve. We'll be talking about that tomorrow.
And what do you do with the words in English which are different pronunciations but the same spelling? So heterographic homonyms, or homographic heterogeneous, rather.
Well, they're all on the same page.
But would they be the same entry?
You have a subdivision under etymology quite often. I mean, you have to maintain some flexibility on it.
So, like, my name is Dove, which is a bird, but pronounced Dove, it's okay. Also the past tense of dive.
We have
Dove and Dove are both, so would those be two words, or would they be one word with two pronunciations? Or?
First of all, we have an entire category of words like this. Almost 200 of them so far.
That's a good number. We're about 1,500 actually altogether.
We're getting there. It's as people discover them. So this is an article that's a little bit more developed, and you can see that there's a pronunciation for dove, and there's a pronunciation for doe, and we've actually separated those sections. And this word is a word in Dutch, I didn't know that. It's probably pronounced yin differently in Dutch. How would you say this word in Dutch?
Dover.
Okay. And I'm not going to attempt the Italian. Anybody here know Italian?
Dover.
Yeah. Okay, so we have four different words on the same page. We have three languages, and we're dividing by heading, and we're translating the English. Now, we're not translating the Dutch, and we're not translating the Italian. And the reason we are not translating the Dutch or the Italian is that this is the English dictionary. So you will see an English translation and definition under the Dutch and the Italian. You will not see a list of translations of these words. If you want to find the list of translations for this word in as it means in Dutch, you would click on the English translation and go to that. Is that the most effective way we could be organizing things? Not quite. We're working on it. Part of what we've done here is to take the existing Wikimedia software and just create flat pages and attempt to structure the data.
Harriet, this was a big issue at the beginning of having it as all words in all languages.
Right.
And it leads to some interesting complications. And of course, then the projects did start in other languages. The French and the Polish were the first ones, and then things were able to develop from there. So you need to define territory. And I've had discussions with Gerard on this, and you have to look at what are the relationships going to be between the separate Wiktionaries and Wiktionary Z.
At this moment in time, it is technically possible to add interwiki links from the Wiktionary to Wiktionary Z. It is at this moment in time, given the development, not possible to be against the other way around. So it would be possible to have both check if a word exists in Wiktionary Z and have a link on the interwiki links on the bottom, for instance, saying that you can find something in Wiktionary Z. That's possible, that's doable.
Okay.
And if you want that, then it's just a matter of asking, okay, if you can write the bottom, which is that. So,
before you go any farther, who here knows what an interwiki link is?
A what?
Interwiki. One, two, three, sort of.
Okay.
This particular article, let me go back to Doug and Joe. This particular article has several interwiki links. What they are is they're just little guys down at the bottom of the page. They don't show up in the article. Where they show up, and you can't quite see it on the screen, unfortunately, is right over here. They're saying that this word has pages in other languages. So if you want to see this word in French, it's telling you there is a French, and it's giving you a link to that word in French. Most of that doesn't happen manually. Most of that is a bot. But here's what the French Wiktionary looks like. And you see the formatting is different.
So I don't have my laptop here, but if somebody has dovish as a related term, as an adjective, it would please me.
So that's one of the goodies that you can do in Wiktionary for right now, is just to link it to the other languages. I promised I'd throw in a little bit about bells and whistles. There are some neat things that you can do with the dictionary just because it's electronic. It's not paper. If you're writing a paper dictionary, you're limited by space primarily. A dictionary that is trying to be a complete picture of the language has an awful lot of words in it. Something like 300,000 words and 600,000 inflected forms in the Oxford English Dictionary. And if you've ever seen a complete copy of the Oxford English Dictionary, it's 20 volumes. It looks like an encyclopedia. So if we're not limited by space, and if we're not limited by paper, what can we do? Because this is all a volunteer project, is what are people willing to do?
What's fun to do?
What's fun to do? But a lot of the things that we can do, well, first of all, because we're not paper, We don't have to exclude words simply because they are rare or obsolete or anything like that, simply because they take up extra space. We can put them in there, they'll take up a few bytes on some server somewhere, and if anybody needs them, they're there. They're not really in the way.
Yeah, but they take up people's time if they're in the way of somebody who's trying to learn reasonable words.
Well, we, to some extent, we do try to mark words that are no longer in common use, or terms that are no longer in common use. So that's the easy thing.
But then that is a very debatable issue.
And that's debatable. But, you know, the last print citation was Shakespeare, it's probably not so common anymore.
But someone had proposed that,
any
word that hasn't been used in the last 20 years should be considered archaic.
And isn't that the same problem with new words? I mean, you know, I could invent a word and just...
That's a good question.
But the thing with the format of this, of this dictionary is if the project lives for a certain amount of time, in 15 or 20 years, there would be new people who would be editing older definitions to to sort of catch up with the language development. And we're going to lose the language of the beginning of 21st century and move to the language of the mid-21st century.
You have to look at how words have evolved.
Yeah, but
we're
going to lose that in the open environment because just people will re-edit it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like there was a Fred Astaire movie, The Gay Divorcee, which should not be taken as modern sense.
Well, actually, the OED has the dates of all the earliest usage and so forth. So actually, if you hit that all electronic records, certainly Oxford has it, you could print a dictionary, OED dictionary, as of 1420, even though none was ever published. You could just collect all the ones that were done by then, and then that was it. So Wiktionary could do the same if it had the right quotes by date. Then you could, 20 years ago, when people are wondering what was the language of the 60s and what did totally tubular mean.
We are starting to have some citation by date. It's not quite that well organized yet, but yes, that's certainly something we can do.
That requires quite a lot of research.
To go back to an earlier question we had with them, we do not want the word that you and your two buddies at school just made up. We get that sometimes. this is a true story. I was talking to a friend of a friend, and they were going on about this trip they had taken. She had invented the word muskaroon to mean any small animal. Muskaroon, it's not a word.
Okay.
To mean any small animal that she didn't know what it was. You know, squirrels, groundhogs, might be a gopher, don't know. We don't want that, because nobody else knows what it means.
It's quite a good word. It is a good word.
It is. If it gets coined to the end, yeah. It leaves this room and it gets to the point where everybody kind of knows what it is, if it's in several print sources, we'd be happy to have it.
Actually, Webster's is encouraging people to nominate words that ought to be words. That would be a good candidate.
It can be online. Print references carry just a little bit more weight, partly because they've been through probably some editorial process, particularly will bend the criteria for inclusion a little bit if somebody important has used a particular word. What we're trying to avoid is these words that people made up, God's words that just came up out of the blue. Hung around in a very small community for a very short amount of time and really didn't amount to much.
So do you have the word Google as a verb?
Yeah, there are quite a few. One of the things that we can do is keep up with the languages and changes.
Are you going to say French?
I'm still in French.
So French, don't Google yet.
can't even have weekends, so I don't think they would Google.
They have red cheese.
The Academy de France does not want to use the word "le weekend" in French.
That when people use language in common things, then we're not bound to do what the French Academy de France wants. We can have words that are actually used.
And
so we are not bound by the Academy.
And that's one of the things that we do want, is if there is a word that is a little bit outside of the usual academic parlance, we would like to rewrite that, as long as it's getting used.
Right, but taking up on the matter of weekends, Quebec would use fin de semaine, which would still be considered an anglicism by the Academy.
I wonder how many of you have heard this particular word. Astroturfing is the fabrication in political campaigns of something that's intended to look like a grassroots effort. One of the things that we can do to change the subject a little bit.
So where is the reference? You said that when you gave.
Reference on this one appears to be the Wikipedia article, which does in fact have a couple of folks who have used it and talks about the trademark here and so on and so forth. So that's one of the things that I should probably toss into this section. We do have a way to link to Wikipedia, and that's one of the bigger powers of the dictionary. You can link to Wikipedia, you can link to Commons, you can link to Wikibooks if there's something that you want to show off. So this is probably a fairly complete article. It's also got an image. This is probably from the Commons. And I think that's a very important thing for us to start adding more of the articles where there isn't a possibility of adding an image. Certainly some words don't have images really that go along with them. Ideas don't necessarily have pictures, but animals sure do. And you can either say that this is a member of such and such genus and species and have everybody scratching their head, or you can give them a picture of an elephant. If they've ever even heard of an elephant, they now know what an elephant is. We do have a few other goodies. Let me see if I can find an example of one. One of our editors has gone through Project Gutenberg and collected frequency data within Project Gutenberg. So this word is 129th in that frequency data. And it's somewhere between every and light. That was done primarily automatically, like some program in spare time. And so we have these for about the first 500,000 most frequently used words.
Well, for that little insert, I think it's only for the first 1,000 or so, it's not that far. But as you get into the less frequent words, the results are statistically less significant.
Right.
And what purpose do they use for
the text of all the text that's in the project?
So it's pretty much pre-19.
Yeah. It is dated. It is dated, but it has the advantage that it's already in electronic and it's free. So it's not at all an unbiased source, but it was one you could grab into and
so which stationaries already exist on protected?
I don't know precisely.
Well, is there Dan Rocher's thesaurus?
And
then Bartlett's quotations from 1898.
Yeah, there are
the 1917 book, Merriam-Webster's Outcome, right? The Century Dictionary's Outcome, right?
The 1911 Encyclopedia Britannica, the 11th edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Century Dictionary was a great resource because it more than the Webster got into a lot of detail with quotations and origins. And where the Webster would just give a name of a person, at least Century gives some chance of finding the material. Tracking down some of the obscure quotes in the Webster is a major undertaking.
Century has a really nice website that searches the gifts. Yes. And it's fun to go and mess around.
Which one is that?
The Century Dictionary has a nice site.
Just a shame that he's not in the totally digital format so that he can actually use it.
There is a template on the English dictionary that is a preview only time. We don't want you to leave this in an article. But if you put this template, ARTFL, in an article, it will take you to several references that can be useful sources. This is the 1913 Webster's take on the word terrible. And you can use this information, but it's dated. The way that we've used the language has changed considerably in the last almost 100 years. So if this gives you some ideas, if it gets you started on some of the specifics. And if you'd like to read the code that they write, the etymologies, and by all means use this, if that's not for you.
And as to the first quote up there, is prior. Well, then you have to figure out who prior is and what work it is and try to, I mean, in theory, what I would like to see happening with things like this is that they're also included in Wikisource and cross-reference that way. But, you know,
that's
a big
undertaking.
That's
a lot of project. The other thing I should mention there have been attempts to organize dictionaries by category in the past, and this usually results in a lot of bitter lexicographers fighting with each other over whether this category is more important or more appropriate than that category, and what a category ought to be for a word. One of the goodies that we have in the English, in the dictionaries in general, is that we can assign categories to multiple words.
You can assign multiple categories to the same word?
You can assign multiple categories to the same word. So, dove would probably be a good example of it. It should have multiple categories. And in fact, it does. If you look down here, English words with multiple etymologies. This came from a couple different directions. Dutch adjectives, Dutch nouns, Italian verbs, and English heterodox. And you'll notice that these categories have a couple of different functions. Some of them are what kind of word it is. This is a heterodox. Some of them are what kind of thing it is. This is a verb. And that's really kind of two separate things that we're doing with the same function. We have some pretty cool categories, I think.
It means you're building a thesaurus as well as an organization. It's a thematic organization.
Yeah, there has been some attempt at thesaurus building as well.
Wikisaurus, where is it living these days?
You spelled it.
Wikisaurus is not that big. It's a separate project. There's a lot of the regular contributors, I would say, ignore it, and a lot of the yahoos and vandals out there
got off on a wrong foot. When the person was interested in synonyms for not impolite words.
But there is a thesaurus. More often there is just a section of synonyms or something like that on the article. That's not a very tidy way of doing business because they're not collected in one place. It's not very consistent.
I tend to feel more looking at the Broget approach with the categorization there.
Yeah.
I mean, some thesauruses have taken the view that it should be a dictionary type of listing. But you know, a lot of meanings and the things in a thesaurus are not exact synonyms. So that you really have a sort of a cosmic cloud around the word for what statistically a value might be.
So we do have a number of interesting categories, yes.
There'd be a difference between a thesaurus and a thematically organized dictionary. So, you know, like Longman in the 80s had a thematically organized dictionary of about 15,000 words. But, you know, you look up, you know, I'm making it up at this point, but you'd have a dinner party and there would be all the things related to a dinner party. You know, they're not synonyms in that sense. They just, interesting way for people who are learners of English. Find that especially valuable because if they want to know, like, what are all the animal sounds? Quack, you know, quack, bark,
meow,
and then they can get them all in one place.
And those are not going to be the same in another language either.
Oh, no,
no,
very
absolutely
different.
Not.
Or even the category.
And
in fact,
because there is a cultural view on what kind of sounds animal makes, which seem pretty strange to somebody in a different culture.
In fact, we have a category of just that. We have started to have translations of some of these sounds, and you will see if you go through them that the chickens apparently don't sound the same in Bosnia.
Well, that's a rooster, not a chicken.
Roosters, some kind of fun stuff. I guess I should probably finish up here. It's going on, and some people are probably getting hungry. I'm certainly happy to take questions for a little while longer. I will add one more thing. One of the things that a dictionary has that I would say most dictionaries don't is a community. And we like our discussions. We like to talk about these things. If you have a better idea about how we should be running things, jump in and join the frame. This is our beer parlor. This is the dictionary equivalent of, what is it, the village pump?
Yeah.
Okay. So the beer parlors are asking what's going on here. The tea room is for asking what is this word, or could I please have a translation of? And in fact, the discussions here usually are a little bit more civilized, most of the time. And here's the grease pit living room. We've lately created a page called Grease Pit for those who are interested in the technical aspects of where dictionary is going. So if that's the page, just to
use it.
Yeah, I'm looking for it here. Here it is. Okay.
And of course, and I have to confess, with the beer parlor, since I'm the one that initiated that term, which is, it's a particularly Canadian point of view, because the idea of a beer parlor started in Canada. It has developed in the U.S., but with a different spelling.
And the other thing you can do, if you have any questions, if you get there and you try this and you're scratching your head about the formatting, is ask any of us. Ask an admin, ask another user that looks like they know what's going on. Most people I've found, I've met quite a few people, are pretty friendly around here.
There's one thing that is also really valuable, that's our IRC channel. We have,
yes.
There is the dictionary channel, and if there are questions or things that have to do with words, you find people from many nationalities, and it's good fun to see how we get along. It's fun, it's genuinely fun. We have people from France and people from Sweden.
We have people from 30 countries on four continents by my count. since I started asking and writing things down. Those are just the ones I'm aware of.
Do you have any other statistics on growth of people and listening?
Sorry, what's that?
Do you have any statistics about growth and
about
growth?
Growth.
How the addiction's growing? Number of terms?
There are statistics.
I forget what the link
is. Somewhere.
Eric Software, that's a guy who has written a statistic package that's used by practically every project. And if you can find how many people were working on the project in a given month, how many words were, how many changes there were, basically all kinds of things that are interesting to people who have an interest in numbers. Well,
let me see if I can find
information. So it's on the main page of the project.
I don't know if you've linked it. I've got a link to one such page here, so.
There we go.
So this is just users by number of edits. We have some people in the 30 and 40,000 range. I think most of those edits, except for Lotto's, gets from manual. here's the page, or here's one of the pages of our statistics. But it is growing, and it's getting to where it's useful enough. It's, and I think it's getting to where it's just being useful. So if some of you will join us and check it out, ask lots of questions.
Yeah, I mean, then some of us aren't friendly. I mean, there is this issue of getting all words in all languages. You've got a non-English word that you think should be referenced in English, by all means, that's it.
Yeah. So
have
you got a feeling for how many words there are in English?
Well,
the
Century Dictionary, my own copy was produced in 1914 or thereabouts. It claimed to have over 300,000 words. But then you get into the question of what constitutes a separate word. We tend to include the inflections as separate words as well. So this is going to put that number up astronomically. To me, the usage would be you can look up a word, you're reading something, and you don't even know what language it's in, and what is the chance that you would be able to look it up and know what language you're looking at? Which creates a whole range of other issues as related to non-Roman script language. It can probably be worked out fairly easily with Greek or Cyrillic languages, but when you start into some of the Oriental languages, it's quite a challenge. That Japanese is normally written with four different alphabets, in fact, which are used in different circumstances. You get questions with other languages that grammar as we know it has been developed in an Indo-European context. The church, the Latin church, was very prominent through the development of European civilization. But that you have to be aware that concepts such as noun and verb may not really exist in some of these non-Indo-European languages. And that presents a whole range of things. One person has not put a lot of words in Ojibwe and trying to resolve that in Ojibwe. There have been some attempts to resolve that in Japanese words as well. Lots of room for things to do.
questions or comments, or should we all go in one?
Is there going to, are there any other events related to the dictionary?
Dictionary will be giving a talk on it tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow afternoon.
A whole blog?
We have a whole blog. We have a whole blog. We have a whole website for you to check out. If you're interested in that, please do check it out. It's not strictly open to public editing yet, just because it's still under construction. But if you're interested and you'd like to come and create an account and ask one of us to turn it on for you, let us know that you've been here. Let us know that you're affiliated with the Wiki projects already.
That's to get into what?
To get into Wiktionary, so you'd like to try editing.
Oh, I see. It's not open the way.
It's not all the way open. You've got, you can certainly look at it and use it. If you'd like to edit, you will have to ask, and that's fine. We'd be happy to have you join us, as long as you know it's still open.